Shalom and welcome to Tehillim Yomi. Today we learn Psalm 97. Hashem Malach, God reigns. This is a song about which the psalmist yearns to sing in Psalms 95 and 96. So what is this song about? First and foremost, it focuses on nature and its capacity to rejoice in God's presence. The first eight verses describe the reaction of nature when God's presence appears, as well as the shame of those who do worship idols. Adonai Malach, Tagel Haaretz, Yismuchu, Iyim Rabim, Anan Varafel Svivat, Tzedek Mishpat, Mechon Kiso. The Lord reigns, the earth rejoices, the multitude of islands are glad. Clouds and darkness are around him, righteousness and judgment are the foundation of his throne. Eish Lefanav Telech Utlahet Saviv Sarav, fire goes before him and burns up his enemies. Heiruv Rakav Tevil Ratav Atachal Haaretz, his lightnings lighten the world, the earth sees and trembles. The mountains melt like wax at the presence of the Lord, at the presence of the Lord of the whole earth. The heavens declare his righteousness, and all the people see his glory. Confounded are those who served carved idols, who boast themselves of idols. Bow down before him, all you gods. The land rejoices, perhaps referring to the peoples of the lands, as can be understood in the second half of the verse, which parallels it. Many islands rejoice, Yismuchu Yim Rabim. So perhaps at first it is a reference to people from all different lands who are happy or who should be happy with the news that God reigns. In this psalm, humans and nature function as one, without much distinction between them. Thus, the different possibilities in translating the earth rejoices, as well as the focus on clouds, darkness, fire, lightning, mountains, together with people of the nations who see his glory, and the shame and confoundment of those people who serve idols. Thus, we have an interesting presentation of an inanimate object given animation. Heavens declaring, earth rejoicing and trembling, while at the same time, the foolish people who attempt to animate the inanimate, like trees and rocks who they pray to, they will hang their heads in shame when confronted by the one true God. Verses 3 to 4 describe the image of God with fire preceding him, justice and judgment, the foundation upon which his throne sits, lightning lighting up the world all around and the earth shaking. It reminds me a bit of the depiction of the chariot of God in Ezekiel 1. Which also uses the terminology of fire, lightning, and the throne of God. This revelation, then, elicits euphoria, rejoicing, and song. But who sings, though? Fascinatingly, Sforno reads this psalm as taking place after the Day of Judgment. For all those who survived and have come to acknowledge God as true judge of the lands. In this context, most commentaries translate the mountains here as a reference to the nation of the world who rejected God. They will melt away. Throughout the psalm, there's a reference to the battle between Rishaim and Tzadikim, evil and righteous, until the final section where the psalmist states it outright. Some commentaries simply refer to the righteous as Israel and the evil as nations of the world, but I choose to see a more universalistic depiction, good versus evil, righteous versus wicked. A more inclusive version of the singing of the glory of God in the world. If there's a battle taking place, it is clearly between those who know God and those who create idols, where the former, whoever they are, rejoice, sing, feel the warm embrace, God's reign, while the latter are shamed and confounded. They who took pride in their self-created gods are now shocked when they see those gods bowing down to the one true God. Zion hears and is glad, the daughters of Judah rejoice because of your judgments, O Lord. Though there is a reference here to Zion and Judah, I choose to focus on the land rather than the people, the idea of Zion rather than the Israelites, who are never mentioned in this psalm, but are visibly present in its parallel Psalm 99. Radak and Sforno explain that Zion is used here symbolically as the center of truth and justice. Zion will finally rejoice. Who then are the daughters of Judah? Radak once again translates Benot as satellites, referring to the cities surrounding Zion, rather than some random women coming out to sing and dance. And why do they come out to rejoice? Ki ata Adonai Elyon al kol haaretz, mod na'aleita al kol Elohim. For you, Lord, are high above Elyon. You're exalted far above all gods. Here the psalmist calls out directly to God, saying, you are the God Elyon of all the lands, rising above all other gods and leaders. Many commentators note that Elyon was the name of a god, the greatest god in ancient times, who was elevated above all others. This is clearly seen in the story of Melchizedek and Abraham in Bereshit 14, which describes the former as a priest to Melchizedek, El Elyon, the most high god. That was his god. Thus, when the psalmist here, and in 30 other places in Tehillim, makes mention of God as Elyon, it is clearly a rebuttal. It is a clear rebuttal of all of those idolatrous notions of God as compared to the actual God. The Bible recognizes other gods with a small g. The one true God governs all other forms of God in the world, whether in nature or in leadership of in civilization. The psalmist begins with the theme of the first song with a desire to divide the world into two sides, those who acknowledge God and those who serve idols. They may or may not be identical with the two other categories in the psalm, the righteous and the wicked, as is the topic of the remainder of the psalm. O'adei Adonai sinura, shomer nafshot chasidav miyad ha'sheim yatzilim. You who love the Lord, hate evil. He preserves the souls of the pious ones. He saves them from the hand of the wicked. Or zaru la tzadik li shrelei simcha, simchu tzadikim ba'adonai. Light is sown, planted for the righteous, and gladness for the upright in heart. Rejoice in the Lord, you righteous, and give thanks to his holy name. This final theme is quite interesting in that the psalmist does not leave any room for the pacifists or libertarians. You're either in the camp of the righteous or the wicked. You have to choose. What's more, the righteous hate evil, and God will guard his pious from the clutches of the evil. We saw this idea in Psalm 15, which described the ideal attributes for the one who will dwell in the tent of the Lord. There, he identifies the righteous as one who repulsed by the actions of the wicked and the scoffer. Or Zarul HaTzadik, light is planted for the righteous. God embeds light into the pious, joy into his adherents. I get chills when I read this verse because it is recited by the head of the community on the night of Yom Kippur. I recall Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal walking around the yeshiva and wailing out this verse, Or Zaruah Latzadik, with spiritual intensity. But what does it exactly mean, light is planted in the righteous? The Midrash Tehillim speaks of the holy light God created at first, but then hid it for only the righteous. Radak explains that the light of this world is planted for the world to come. Ibn Ezra, however, takes it literally, saying that the planting of the righteous will yield greater bounty as a reward. One commentator explained that or doesn't mean light, but a field, so you plant in the field. But how do these interpretations fit in with the second half of the verse, Uli Yishrei Leiv Simcha, gladness for the upright in heart? I believe that the verse is in the poetic form of ABBA, such that or and simcha are both bestowed or planted into the fiber of the tzaddik. A righteous soul possesses the true beautiful joy of life, and that is a gift from God, but only if they in turn channel that joy back to God. Simchut tzadikim b'Hashem, they rejoice in God and acknowledge his holy memory. There's no mention of Israel, no chosen nation. Rather, God's righteous, who fight against evil, declare God as most supreme, receive that godly light which brings great joy, a joy they return to God and his holy name.